This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and today I'm joined again by Superintendent Charles Oskey of Johnson County School District Number 1. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning. How are you?
Nice to see you. And this is our first get together of the new year, but we're off to a brisk start.
And, yes, we are.
And it seems that 25 may have some glitches and some unexpected things come up in it. And as a parent, yesterday I received an email from you, actually. But it was sent to parents, guardians and staff about a breach of power school that immediately kind of causes a rise of anxiety when you think about a breach and all that confidential information. Maybe you'll just take a moment to walk us through what happened.
No, I think that's a great question. So this is where we're at. So PowerSchool itself, which is a third party, which we consider our student information system, tracks a lot of data, which Johnson County has been with PowerSchool since 2001. So it's been close to 25 years. So nationwide and in Canada, and I even think some schools worldwide with PowerSchool, there was a breach of data that was downloaded. And that data that was downloaded was kind of like ransom. So PowerSchool paid that ransom. And the... as you would say, the criminal minds that did that said they ended up destroying all the information so it wouldn't go public. But
how do you know?
But the reality is, in visiting with the federal investigators that are involved in this, because this isn't just Johnson County, it's a federal deal. And with the state of Wyoming, they say we are not going to bank on that. So we are preparing and going to take protocol as if the data is still could go out. So what does that data mean? Well, in that process is we need to know what fields and stuff were actually downloaded. It did impact Johnson County as it impacted probably a majority of PowerSchool users in the nation or the world. So we're in that process. PowerSchool has reassured us that the hacker is no longer in their system. And so with their guidance and the state guidance, we will continue just to monitor and do that through the process. You will notice in the letter it said potential of Social Security numbers. Well, back in 2001, that was kind of how you tracked. We no longer use Social Security numbers and probably haven't for close to 20 years. So realistically, we have to identify what Social Security, if there were Social Security numbers in there. But we want to reassure you right now, all the tracking that we've done in public education is what's called your WISER ID. And to my understanding right now, it's just potentially, could be names and it could be a phone number or a physical address. We don't know, but we will keep everybody updated through that process. But there is that potential that back when PowerSchool originated in Johnson County as in other districts, which is almost 25 years ago, it's a management of tracking system. So as we move through this, we will update our website as we're informed of what we actually had in it. Make sure our websites are secure. And we just want to be transparent with the community. The state was not going to put anything out. So I felt it was important, since other districts were putting things out yesterday, that we put something out. My direct apologies. You are going to get another letter today because the links were not the correct links in the letter that I sent out. So I will be sending a new letter out with an apology. I accept full responsibilities for those links not being correct. But prior to you coming to this meeting here today, we have just resolved that. So I hope to have that out by 1 o'clock today. But I do want to reassure you, yeah, there's a lot of anxiety on my part, as everybody's part. But the security piece is we are not sweeping it under the carpet. We are going to address the issues as PowerSchool brings it to us. We actually have one of the PowerSchool support people on site today. And we will look through that and move from there. But a lot of the questions that we did receive is about Social Security numbers. And I just want to be transparent in saying we've been with this program for 25 years. And right now, the information that is in there in relation to students is not a Social Security number. It's your WISER IDs, which is that's why the state moved to Wiser IDs.
Okay. So social, and that would be the same for any parent who had signed up or was in the system in some form or other. And what I'm understanding you saying is that basically it is just a third-party hacker taking information. It is not that they have infected PowerSchool with malware or anything else, and it's not coming into your own system.
It is not.
Okay.
However, there's no guarantee, and Murphy's Law comes into this. If there's something that's suspicious that comes as a phone call or comes across your emails, I do ask that you report that. But there's nothing infiltrated within our system right now. They are out of the system. It was basically a data download.
So I did notice this term in one of the final paragraphs of your letter, which says remain vigilant. And I did wonder what that really means, because we're all subject to, if you're online in any capacity, you are subject to either spam or scamming or all kinds of fraud. It seems to just be very present in all sorts of ways. What do PowerSchool advise you? Because I appreciate, Charles, you're a school superintendent and not an IT guy. What does remain vigilant mean? What are you really asking people to look for?
I think we get really complacent that anything that comes across our phones or our emails is something you just call back. And so if there's something from the school district that doesn't sound like the superintendent would say that, or that's a phone message that's saying, hey, we need you to pay this, or this is happening. I just want you to stay vigilant and say, no, that doesn't sound right. We need to do a little bit of investigation. So, and you're correct. It's not just this situation. It's coming from every world. We're dealing with it in the accounting and banking world. So I'm just asking that you just say, this doesn't sound like the school district, and ask some questions. Because again, the level of data that was downloaded, we're going to figure that out over time, but just don't rely on, oh, this is just what we do. Just be a little cautious with anything that comes across, as we should be with everything.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, from other conversations that I've had with law enforcement, basically approach with great suspicion if it's asking you for personal information of any sort.
Absolutely. Yes.
And be cautious about just clicking on the link and replying, or calling back the number that's there, you know. Maybe look for a different way of doing it.
Yeah, and I say it's very unfortunate, but it is unfortunate. We live in a day and age where people like to hack into systems and make, similar to the situation where I had a bunch of parents said, hey, your student's not at school at Cloud Peak, and their students were enrolled at Buffalo High School.
I was one of those parents, I know, and so actually I happened to be sitting next to my child and my student in Buffalo High School on that very day, at the moment that I got the text saying your child is not at Cloud Peak as she should be.
It's like, okay, so again, technology, we're in the cloud, hackers are in. I mean, we do a lot of things to be efficient with our money. But again, hackers are getting to the point where companies are having to, you know, really up their security. And it's something we need to, we can't afford to have that kind of security in most cases. So that's why we do most of the things virtual. But as technology gets better, hackers get better. And with AI hitting the world that we're doing, AI supports some of that. So when I say just be very diligent when things come across, it really rethink things. And we're just in a trusting factor, I think, some too much with whatever social media says is real, or whatever comes across your phone. So just be pretty diligent as things come across. And if it's like a gut instinct, like, no, you're asking for personal information, or this is what the school would typically ask for, let's ask the right questions.
Well, thank you for explaining that. And we look forward to getting, you know, whatever is the next update. I mean, as with all these things, you're chasing rather than getting ahead of it. It's very hard. But I hope that the breach, it sounds like it's significant. I mean, a massive, gargantuan breach.
Yeah, we have been reassured that they are no longer able to get into the PowerSchool system, but it doesn't take away the fact they got in and they downloaded stuff and they have that information.
So in your conversations about this, and I appreciate you've been focusing on solutions rather than anything else, what do these type of hackers want? You mentioned a ransom that they paid back. Is that really, they want money?
Well, honestly, that's probably where it started. Mm-hmm. And PowerSchool is one of the largest student information systems in the world, which, you know, tags money behind it, mm-hmm. and insurance. So I'm sure it was. And that number will probably never be disclosed, other than PowerSchool did say they paid a ransom. So
yeah,
and so.
But it does actually give the people who are implicated in that, who may have had their own personal data, it does give them an idea of how concerned they need to be, because if it's simply just for the ransom money, then the data is less relevant than if it is your own data and it's actually being used to be sold on or for some other reason. So, there is some relevance in that, although we don't know and can't be sure.
But as we know more, I will make sure everybody else knows more. But I also guarantee you that it just didn't stop with this. We have went back the last 24 hours, have been some sleepless times here where I just finished up a meeting this morning. Every software company that we deal with virtually, we're going to make the call to say, what are we doing to make sure that you as an organization are preventing this from happening? So,
well, thank you. So moving on, that you had your work session last Wednesday, and there's another regular board meeting on Monday. And indeed, I was at that work session, and a large portion of it, and I will post a link to the relevant section here, was about what's coming up legislatively, because we've got a big session coming up. Last year, it was a smaller, just a budget session, but this year, everything is on the table, and there's a lot of discussion about changes in education. And I would like, Charles, if you would just spend a few minutes just talking about the things that have particularly caught your eye. Both our representative, Senator Barry Crago, and House Representative Marilyn Connolly were here, and they were talking about some of the things that they had noticed. But what are the things that you are particularly watching for that could potentially impact Johnson County, either positively or negatively, coming up?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. So as I explained to the board and I explained to our state representatives, my number one priority as a superintendent is make sure that our component project funding for KC, that $4.5 million project, makes it through legislation and is approved. That's huge for us. So that's priority number one.
Okay, so can you just explain to people who may not be familiar with what that is, what is that you're watching in that?
Yeah, so the process is we have probably close to $30 to $40 million worth of building or facility projects that we need to fund. And we're not going to be able to chip away those with our $1.5 million budget over the next 10 years. So the district has been very proactive since I've been here, and we finally got put into the system for component project funding, which means legislation has identified these as major projects that can't be funded by the school district. So the governor approves the budget, and then that is approved, and that goes through legislation for approval. So we are one project that was put in for approval and got accepted. So funding will go through legislation, the governor's budget will be approved. So I've just seen it in the past where sometimes these get changed. So that's what my number one focus is. That's a project that needs to happen. And at $4.5 million, that will be a spotlight potentially. So just watching to make sure that we say how important and critical it is to make sure that our HVAC system, our heating system and cooling system in KC, we get the money to do that project this summer. So that's priority one for me.
So just to sort of dwell on this for a moment, you have a substantial number, and as far as I understand it, Charles, these are not new build projects. These are just keeping maintenance. These are maintenance and repair projects. There's nothing fancy and new, but you said 30 million or so in cost of projects that we know are going to be coming up because things are either aging out or they're beginning to fail, and we know that what the repair and maintenance or replacement cost is for them. Against the annual budget, that's a massive amount. What happens if that money is not found? If you can't educate kids in a school building that is closed?
So, excuse me. So the answer to that question is why we're doing what we're doing is we did the study, we're being proactive, and I appreciate the state has a system because they just don't want everybody to come to the table. But we've got to prove that we've been providing maintenance. But our buildings are older. So being in the system, being part of the process of major big projects coming up, the state has the same thing. They just want to know in advance so they can start planning. So KC was one of those projects. we're going to put a lot of money into VHS spoiler systems next, which means that's the next big million-dollar project is after the boilers are done, is we've already seen failure with the system that supports that, which is the technology, the, you know, you turn your heat up and down with that little device.
The thermostat.
So, and whether, yeah, we reference, I reference them as a thermostat, they're a computer. Okay. Anyway, the computer is not talking to the system. So those projects, through our evaluation that we did a couple years ago, along with some other projects, is what we started prioritizing so we can show the state, look, at we've got some $4 to $5 million projects. Our roofs are all out of warranty now. I mean, those are all $2 to $3 million projects. So again, we decide we have to prioritize, and obviously keeping the school open and the HVAC is important. So those will be our first priorities, and then we'll look at the roofs. So it's actually just long-term planning over the next 5 to 10 years, saying, look, we can afford this with major maintenance, but we can't. Can the state help us out? So this to me is why it's such a big focus. This is the first time we've done this from my research in the district for a long time. We were never in that, we never put projects in prior to me being here. So now as we get into the system and we work through it, there are some other major projects that we'll put in too. And so watching this legislation to make sure this one gets through is important to me.
So we have champions, we have local champions, you know, our senator and our House representative, yep, who understand the significance of that. What happens if this is a casualty in legislative process, because there are casualties? What would you do then?
Like everything that Charles does in his job is he takes it as a new opportunity and we will restructure. But I'll tell you, I will go to the state and say, look, this was a mistake. We have to, this is something that's a requirement. So, okay. I don't see it happening, but I have to do my due diligence and say, if you just assume that it's going to happen, that's when things go wrong. So we got to do our due diligence to tell our story why it's happening, and not, I don't like being a victim. So let's be proactive.
So one of the things that struck me that Senator Barry Crago said at the work session was that this is going to be a very heavy session for bills, the number of bills, probably 3 or 4 times the number that there previously have been, that there are a lot of people coming forward with a lot of proposals and so on, and it's going to be very heavy.
I think the number he said is right now there's like 220 or 240 bills, and they're projecting anywhere between 800 and 900.
That's what I heard him say too.
That's extraordinary.
It is, and I don't know how those legislators actually manage that process, let alone the offices that support them doing that. That makes it hard to weed out what's going on. What have you noticed of the 200 or so that are currently available to look at? What have you noticed that has attracted your attention?
Well, I think the next one that isn't on, but I know it's coming through conversations, is we need to get the bill passed with that 15% to 30% carryover. Currently, it's at 30%. They increased it to that with COVID funds. Now that COVID funds are over, is getting that bill to come back through. And it's not about saving 30% or 25%, wherever we land, is it's about a revenue flow. So that's the next big financial piece that I think all districts, and I can say for Johnson County School District, that bill is going to be big for us with the revenue flows for us as a district to operate in the months when we don't receive money. And so there's 3 months there that this bill will impact. So making sure we can pay the bills, and it's just an accounting thing. It really is. You know, you go from July 1st to June 30th, but yet you're not paid on majority of it in May, June, and July and August. So having cash flow to pay the bills, it's not that we're saying we're putting 25% of our budget away. It's being able to say we can maintain our savings so that we can pay when we're not receiving revenues. That's what this bill is all about.
So just to explain to people who may not be familiar with this particular topic area, the state only pays you for a certain amount of the year. You have 3 months or so, which is fallow period, and you only get local county revenue, which is insufficient. Yeah. And so this bill is really, it's not about education at all. It's about financial money flow, and it's about being able just to kind of keep the money moving along.
You are correct. So
okay.
Thank you.
Okay. another thing which is coming up, which has caught my attention, and I'm sure has caught many people's attention, is about concealed carry of firearms in school districts. Now, it comes up in other arenas too, such as other public places, government offices, etc., government meetings too. So that is coming. It is anticipated that it will pass, and that you will be able to have a concealed carry. You'll be able to bring your firearm into a school if you have a concealed carry permit. It brings with it some issues that you were bringing up at the work session, of course, which is things like insurance liability and what it does to that. What are your thoughts on this entire topic?
Well, what I took away from it is it's going to happen. You know, it's going to pass the first week, and if the governor vetoes it, they have enough votes to override his veto. So,
and of course, he did veto it.
In anticipation, that's where it's at. So, what are the concerns with this? Concealed weapons in school. This isn't about the rights and owning. This is about the safety of what's happening in school. So, you're right. What's the liability and the cost that insurance companies are eventually going to say in order to do this? What does that look like? What is the training that's required to be able to address situations that we know will arise? So if you have an upset parent who's carrying, or stakeholder, I shouldn't say parent, that is brings in, and I call it intimidation. So what if the weapon is exposed in such a way they know they have it? Intimidation is happening. There's just some cultural pieces that I think we all need to be aware of, and those are not trainings that we're used to. I also think it's not going to require. I know as an educator and myself, we're going to think about why am I in education if I'm worrying about the concealed weapon.
It's a response to school shootings.
It is,
and the idea being that if you have people who are in a school setting and they're actually armed, then they can in some way respond immediately and effectively to a school shooting situation. But it also brings up other issues. And one is that law enforcement, who would be the lead yes. in responding to that, are trained to shoot the people who have the guns
yes.
in an incident. And are they going to shoot the right people?
No,
because you don't know,
I have to respect law enforcement, and I agree with that, is that they need to go home to their families too. So when they come into a building and they know there's an active shooter, anybody with a gun is going to be the first person that they're identifying, and they're going to take, their job is to take them out. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the reality. So it does add confusion to what that looks like. So, finding that collaboration with them to support them in a situation, because we'd never want it to happen. I mean, let's be very clear. But it does add more risk to them. It adds more challenges and responsibility to us as a district of letting them know, because part of this concealed weapon, which we know is going to go through, you don't have to identify when you go into a school whether you're carrying or not. So not knowing anything. And even if you did, if there's a situation, nobody's going to stop by the office and say, oh, I recognize this person anyway. So they're always going to enter the building with the assumption there's somebody in the building with a weapon. And so it does add a whole new level. How do you deal with that as an administrator? I mean, people will say, okay, I think there needs to be a certain level of training if there's any type of concealed weapons in a school, which, again, as a community and a board, we can take that on right now. The rules allow for that. But there has to be a certain level of training in order for you to do that, because in high intense situations, it's really hard to say that you have the skill set to do some things and where you're at with that process.
So as a school district, you've been using the TAC-1 program for training. How do you envisage, knowing that it's extremely likely that this will go forward, are you having TAC-1 back again?
So the goal is to have them back and work with law enforcement this year, absolutely. I mean, I feel what we did and some of the procedures that we looked at of how we evacuate or how we lock down are critical. But I'm going to bring it to the surface. The number one thing is the training with the law enforcement and getting them in the buildings and doing that training. I think that's been very valuable, and I think they'll say the same thing. That yes, the answer is we need to get them back. I budgeted for them to do this year. They won't be in the schools. We've taken some you know, there's no more ESSER funds. So, but the number one thing for me is to support that law enforcement with that training so that they have some repetition and practice, get to know our building. So the goal is to bring them back this spring and do it again.
And the purpose behind of all of this is student and staff safety.
Absolutely.
What will you be doing for students and staff who may be literally in the midst of a situation like
that? So again, the training, that comes back to building leadership, the training that we've done, the lockdowns, knowing, I mean, just law enforcement knowing what our procedures are in the situation. We're locking down or evacuating or knowing where the situations are. Building leadership has a responsibility to maintain that same protocol because that's what law enforcement's going to be looking at. The other part that we're doing is through these trainings over the last couple of years is we're going to focus the rest of our, as much money as we can to update our intercoms and our door lock systems, which we're doing right now, which is another key component. I mean, the fact is our schools are locked down. There's video cameras and maintaining all that. So we're going to probably finish up that last phase of that, if not this summer, next summer. So continuing to work on the structure itself, the infrastructure for safety and security is another piece, not just the training, but the infrastructure and then the training with the law enforcement. So it's not just for schools. I got to be honest with you. It's, unfortunately, it's movie theaters, it's grocery stores.
It is everywhere.
It is everywhere. So it is something just to give people a reality that this isn't just in schools. This is, unfortunately, I don't want to call it a skill set, but a reality that we at least now understand how to react because it could happen anywhere.
So will students and staff continue to receive some specific training on how to respond? Tech One have been very deliberate and precise in what they do. Is that going to continue?
Yes.
Okay. So going back to, we wandered away from what's going to be happening in Cheyenne.
But I think that's just, I think so the stakeholders know, whatever comes out of it, like concealed weapons, whether we like it or not, Johnson County School District will be addressing whatever the laws come out and making it fit our needs. One of the things that I will do with Kaelin Communication next week is we'll send out another survey based on this because I think our local legislators need to understand how does the community and the staff of Buffalo feel so that they have that data in front of them. So I would ask when that survey comes out, and I know people say another survey, well, how we, this survey information will go to our state leadership and say, look, this is how our community and our parents feel about concealed weapons in school.
And I'm assuming that at some point this will reopen the conversation with staff about arming staff and having guns in classrooms and all those things as well.
I'm not going to pull the wool over anybody's eye and say, no, we're not. That will open the door to that conversation. Absolutely.
Okay. So as a superintendent and as some board members I know have already signed up to go down to the Cheyenne and meet with our legislators and others. And the process in that is not only to build relationships, but to influence and to inform those educators about things. What are you going to be particularly, what do you want them to know?
So annually, the School Boards Association does what's called a legislative forum. So all the school board members from the state of Wyoming are invited down to Cheyenne. We do a training on a Sunday, which they go through all the bills by that time that are on the floor. So out of 850 bills, by that time, we're going to know the 70 bills that are critical. And out of those 70 bills, which ones are education. So they will train us on that. And then we'll get an opportunity to visit with legislators. So there'll be a reception where we get to visit with them one-on-one and address some of these topics. And then the next day we get to go to the Capitol and we'll get to see the House and Senate in operation. But more importantly, we'll get an opportunity to go to committee meetings where you can actually testify. So it allows board members to understand as elected officials the process about how bills go through, how we communicate or testify on specific bills related to education. So I think it's a great opportunity.
And that I've seen it work in practice, what is said in those committees can absolutely change the trajectory of a conversation and a bill and ultimately the legislation.
Absolutely, and I agree with you. So to understand that sometimes when you get people in person testifying rather than a letter or an email, I've seen the vote switch. I'm going to give you a great example. Travis, as our chairman, when he went down the first year, Senator Scott called him out and he stood up and he represented this community and district very well. and actually, you know, in some perception, change their viewpoint of education. So again, that one time, the ability to stand up and say some things as an elected official, because some of our board members actually receive more votes to get elected than some state officials. So that's a good process for them to walk through. But the more you can train boards to understand the process, so, you know, we can always pretend to be victims or we can be proactive. I love the fact that the board is willing to go down and understand the process. So when you talk to a state leadership, you're not just complaining. They usually want to hear your concern, but they want a solution. And it's not just a solution. It's actually one that is actually feasible. So it's just a great process. And then our local leadership, Senator Crago has done a great job of giving us a tour of the Capitol, but we also sit down with him and he does individual training with us about this is what this means. This is what this process. We've bought the School Boards Association or WASA leadership in and done some more training. So it is a very intense. You might want to, I've had a couple of them say, Charles, I'm exhausted. I mean, we start at 6 a.m. and I can go till 9 or 10 o'clock at night and you start over again. So it is a very long 3 days, but it's not a vacation. They actually come back and rest afterwards. So it's a lot of great stuff.
What is the general, do you have a sense of what the general tone of the, it seems there's always a pendulum in motion. What is the, which way is the pendulum moving in education in Wyoming right now?
With legislation, the pendulum swinging in such a way that we've got the spotlight is on public education and the cost of providing that. So I can see us getting an ECA, but after the lawsuit is over and after this legislation, I think the critical point for us is recalibration is this summer, where they're going to start changing the funding model and look at somehow reducing funding for public education. So
and recalibration has its own it has its own meaning in the education world, doesn't it?
It does. So I love your interviews because you slow me down because I talk about this all the time, but recalibration happens every 5 years, and that's where they're required by law to come in and look at the formulas that generate money for public schools. So that will happen this summer. So they'll come in and look at the categories. There's talk about taking the current funding model and not making it a block grant, but making it very strategic. Whatever we give you, this is how you have to spend it.
Who is the they?
So they will set up a committee made up of House and Senate people, and that committee will listen to feedback, and they usually hire Pikus and Auden, which is a third-party firm, usually between $1 and $1.5 million to come in and address to make sure they're funding public education correctly and give recommendations. So between their testimony, the testimony of school districts, and just stakeholders in general, that recalibration committee will then make recommendations or bills to be passed at the next legislative session on how schools are funded. So that's kind of a quick overview. You have a legislative committee that's established that listens to testimony about how school funding is happening. And if they feel out of all these testimonies that you need to change the funding model, those recommendations for changes will come to the following year's legislative session.
And do you have a sense, there has been a lot of public comment and conversation about public school being overfunded and there being a lot of fat in the system. Do you have a sense of how that recalibration process is going to go and whether it's going to benefit a school district like Johnson County?
If all school districts, including Johnson County, don't get involved with recalibration this next summer, if it really does come forward and it's not just a desk audit, I can see public education taking a huge hit in funding. Because you are correct, there is still that impression that schools cost too much and we're putting too much into them, and that will be a focus point.
Okay, well, thank you. You have a lot of things on your docket.
We do.
Mr. Ruski. But
Kate, I have to say, these are great questions, and I think the public needs to know. And if there's things that they still don't feel that they understand, let's ask the questions, or maybe they can ask you, and we can do another interview related to those. But these are great things, and these are great questions, because public education isn't just about A, Bs, and Cs and doing math or arithmetic.
No, our first 2 points when we talked about legislation were actually about buildings.
Keeping our facilities up.
Facilities and maintenance.
Yeah.
They had very little to do with actually educating.
Yes.
Kids and so on. So there's just one final point. You've got a survey, and it's, I understand the dilemma. People want to be consulted and feel that they've had their say in something. But on the other hand, you know, you feel like you're constantly getting a survey.
Yep.
It's an impossible situation. You're caught in a cleft stick. But there was a quick email came out just this morning, actually, about the calendar. Is there really, I took a quick look at it, but I didn't have time to really absorb it. Is there a big difference in what is being surveyed here with option one or option two?
Again, a lot of it has to do with the start and end dates and the in between the length of the vacation times. That's what it comes
to. So that's what you're asking people to just particularly look at.
Because on the other part of the survey is people get upset. Well, we didn't have our opinion. We weren't able to give feedback. So we want to be as transparent as we can. And I get it. Surveys sometimes come across, well, they don't listen to me anyway. Why do I need to fill it out? I want to reassure you, all the data comes in. And a lot of times it's 50%. 49% and 51%. So then we still have to make the decision. We made 51% of the people happy and 49% of them not. And it's always been interesting when we survey people that, you know, if it's unanimous, 90%, that you never, but a lot of times it's a 55-45 vote. So, but again, at least it does help give us an opportunity to know what stakeholders are and where they feel. So they are important. But yes, that calendar survey realistically has to do with vacation days in between, because it's still by state statute. We still currently have 185 days of school, 1,100 contact hours. So the calendar really just meets those. You're just deciding when we want to put those days in place.
Okay. And just out of interest, do you get a fairly good response rate to these surveys? How many people are actually making their voice heard? I'm sure it varies by topic.
But. So it does vary by topic, but we feel really successful when you get over 25%.
Okay.
If it's a hot topic, you'll get 70 to 80% return, but most of the time it's that 25 to 30% you feel is successful.
And what you've really said, Charles, there is that what people reply, you do take a look at and you do listen to. It is not just an electronic exercise to say that you've done it and check a box.
Please hear that. It's not just a checkbox, because I sit down and it takes time to look at it, takes time to gather it. But again, like the cell phone survey is done, we're looking at that data. But the next big one coming across the table, you'll see in the next couple of weeks, will be some type of survey related to concealed weapons. And that's not just for me. That's for state leadership to see. So we really are going to encourage everybody to fill that out.
Well, I'm sure that's the concealed weapon issue is one that is going to garner a lot of conversation. And I look forward to talking with you again about that and hopefully others too in our district. So, Charles, thank you very much indeed for your time, for explaining some of the things in more depth that are coming up before us, the things that keep you extremely busy.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.